Live
and local.
Across the city.
And South Cambridgeshire.
This is Lee Chambers.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Well, I think I'd heard Helen on various things and I'd seen her on Twitter. And like me, she's an early riser. And so I always get up at the crack of dawn and go on my early morning stroll. And then I tweet about what I see. And it's just a thing to get me going in the morning, both physically and creatively, to get me started. And then I think Helen just suggested, would I like to have a go at doing something? And I've always been up for collaborations of any kind. And I thought, well, all right, I'll have a go. So I wrote these few words. I've always been interested in, I like writing songs. I write lyrics for songs and I write things for composers, you know, for choirs and librettos for opera. But what I'm always very interested in is putting words and music together when it's not quite a song. I do like that. When it's not a song, when it's a meeting of language and rhythm and music and sound that creates something that's greater than the sum of its parts. So I thought, well, that'll work well with Helen's kind of open space approach, her mixture of sound art and kind of beats and rhythms. I'm interested in that. And so I sent the words off. And then I always say to composers, do what you want with them. Do what you like. You know, don't treat the words as sacred because they're not. You know, sometimes when I'm writing songs, the meter doesn't quite fit what they want to do. So I say, well, just throw the words away. Throw a word away. Put another one in. You know, I'm not precious about them. And then I said to Helen, either she could do it, she could get somebody to read it, or she could read it, or I could read it. Any of those is fine. And then, so she said, well, she'd like me to read it. So these days, of course, you can just record something on your phone, which is great, and then send it off. And then there it was. It went off into the ether. Then it appeared, you know, and there it is. And it's a very interesting thing, I think. It's a fabulous piece that she's made. I like the way she's treated my voice and moved it around. And it is that thing that you always want it to be, which is something that's not quite a song, but is really greater than the sum of its parts. And I like the spacious feel of it. And it feels like exactly what I intended it to be, which is a sort of meeting of two different forms and a kind of expansion of that.
And I suppose there's always been a link really between poetry and music, hasn't there? Rhythms and cadences.
Yeah, there has. I mean, poetry, of course, began, I think, as shouting to accompany music, that it began as a kind of expression of joy or yearning or fear, and often to accompany music and ritual. And I've always been interested in the oral form of it. And, you know, I like performing my poems. And then you get written poems and in a sense, writing historically kind of took over. So writing poems written down, because they have more of a permanence, became seen as somehow more important than the oral tradition, because the oral tradition is as fragile as it being handed on to the next voice. But yeah, poetry has always been a performed, spoken form, often with music. Of course, the word troubadour comes from the French idea for the singing poet, and rhyme was invented as an aide memoir to help you remember what you were about to do next. So yeah, it's always been that. And I've always been interested in the voice and the mixing of the form. So yeah, definitely. I mean, I like poetry on the page. I love poetry on the page because you can do a lot of things with it that you can't do with poetry for the voice, but vice versa. Poetry for the voice is just the most amazing thing. And it reminds you, when you're walking down the street and people are talking to each other, they're making poems in whatever accent they do it. They're making poems because of the rhythm and the cadence, as you say, and the tone and the timbre and the kind of shared historical moment of it, I think.
And you said you let go of the poem there and let Helen do what she wants with it. That's quite a big thing. I mean, you said it very casually there.
It just feels like once I've written it and once you've sent it to a collaborator, then it's not mine anymore. You know, it has really, it's flown away. It's expecting to fly and it's flown, it's gone. So I never want to be precious about it. I just want to say, look, here's the words. Use half of them, use one of them, use two of them. Put somebody else's words in, do what you like, you know. So it's never feels like anything that I'm worried about. And I've been lucky, you know, when I've collaborated with people, nobody has ever done something that I didn't like. So, but if they did, you know, that's fair enough. I wrote an opera about ice cream vans with a composer from Australia, and we never met. I just sent him stuff. It would arrive in his house in the middle of the night, the day before or something. And it, his music would arrive at my house the day after, in the middle of the night. We never met. And that is, again, the exciting thing about the internet, that we can collaborate across all these areas without having to meet up. That's the only good thing about the pandemic, I think, which is it's freed up. It's done a good, I mean, community radio that you work in has been such a lifeline in the pandemic. It really has. Radio has been a thing that people reach for. And I think community radio is taking on the space that before that, commercial local radio had. And as we know, that's now become much more bland. And there's not a lot happening creatively, I don't think, in commercial local radio. Whereas community radio can be the real voice of a community. And in the future, I hope that when we get back to doing gigs, there'll still be a space for this hybrid form, which means that, you know, you can have some people in the room, but then you can have people watching it on Zoom.
Interesting you say that you're an early riser, and this seems to be reflected in the piece. There are lambs bleating, birds tweeting. It seems to be about nature, the outside, the morning, the dawn.
It does, and I think for me, morning's my best time. It's the time I feel most creative. It's the time the day is waking up. It's about, you know, rhythm is, we're just surrounded by rhythm, the rhythm of the day, the rhythm of the seasons, the rhythm of the sun going around the earth and the moon. The sun doesn't go around the earth. What a stupid thing to say. The earth going around the sun. See, I'm not... I'm a
I
foot.
Always get
I'm
confused.
I'm a foot. Keep it in. Keep it in. And people say I'm dafter. So it's surrounded by rhythm. Early mornings are my best time. My wife will tell you that in the evenings, I tend to nod off. I say I'm just thinking hard, or I'm listening to some avant-garde music, but in fact, I'm nodding off. But I think you should kind of celebrate your best times, and to me, my best time is the early morning, most definitely. Maybe early mornings aren't celebrated enough in music, because often we see music as a thing for the evening, as a thing to go out and listen to in the evening. But to me, I wish all my gigs were breakfast gigs. The morning definitely is the best time for me.
And listening to poetry being read, there's something very elemental about that.
Yeah, it speaks directly to the heart and to the soul. And it kind of bypasses the critical faculties, I think. Just the act of listening. Listening is such a great thing. I listen all the time to all kinds of things, either, you know, on the radio or on podcasts, but also just listening when you're walking about and just listening. Like this morning on my early stroll, when I went out of the house, it was birdsong. And then there was just a very gentle door, sound of a car door closing. He didn't slam the door. He just closed it very gently. I thought, wow, that is a sound. That is a beautiful sound. So I kind of described that on the stroll. And then sometimes, you know, you'll be walking along, you think, what's that noise? And it's your shoes squeaking, you know, so you're kind of taking part in the soundscape. Yeah, I listen all the time to everything. And it can get a bit addictive, you know, just listening and listening all the time. But then that's the great thing about radio, isn't it? That radio is built around listening. And it happens as other things are happening around you. That's what I like about radio. You know, you can be making a cup of tea and you can be washing up and you can be going for a walk, and radio is there in your head and in your ears and becomes part of that listening scape that we all do, I think.
And has the way you read poetry changed over time as you've grown older?
I'm taking more time with it, that's a fact. I have two different kinds of reading, to be honest with you. I do a show on Radio 3 every week called The Verb. And I have to read stuff. I have to read stuff for The Verb because I'm going to interview somebody, so I've got to read their book. And that isn't a kind of skip read, but it's a faster read than I would normally do. And I read it and I mark up the places, like we all the places you want to find to talk about. But then I do find myself taking my time more with poems. I have got so many books in this room that a lot of them have been sent to me. I'm lucky enough people send me books to read for The Verb. And I would like to spend time with a poem, time reading a book. And I calculated if I spend as much time as I want to reading all these books, I'll be about 150 before I've read that shelf. But I like doing that. I think as I get older, you know, I tend to want to sink into poems, particularly poems, more than I used to. Yeah, so the reading has changed, particularly maybe the reading of a lockdown, when we couldn't go anywhere in that first lockdown. I spent a lot of time reading and actually rereading. I like rereading. Rereading's good. I like rewriting. But I like rereading. You know, you pick up a book that you read when you were 20 years younger. You think, wow, that's interesting. You know, there were things in there that I didn't spot, and there were things in me that have changed. You know, a book can be a companion forever. I'm trying to find one to demonstrate. Like this fella here, pulling the book off the shelf. One of my favourite poets, American poet, Clayton Eshelman. Great poet. Been reading him for decades. And then I started looking back at this because it's about, he's very interested in prehistory. And I read it, bits of it again, and I thought, blimey, that's different. That's different. I'm different. He's different. The book's different. That's a nice thing to do, you know. But so, yeah, I do tend to read all the time. Nothing wrong with that, of course.
Nothing wrong with that at all. That's Ian McMillan, poet, and he's been working with Helophonics, a.k.a. Helen Meisner, local musician, on that track, How to Fly. So shall we hear that track? Here it is. It's lovely. Enjoy.
This light, and this light, their colours in the sky.